Conference is being recorded.
Hey everybody, this is Mike Westerdahl here with CriticalBench.com. I've got AJ Roberts on the line. He's an elite level power lifter. Some of his best lifts include a 1,008 pound squat, a 750 pound bench press, and he's pulled 755. He trains at the famous Westside Barbell Club. He was a strength and conditioning coach at the University of Idaho, and now he helps manage one of the largest fitness consulting companies in the world. We're doing this interview today. We're going to be talking about Westside Barbell Club and some of the Westside training methods and some of the fallacies and kind of just talk about the training there. So welcome, AJ. Thanks a lot for being on the call. Is there anything I left out?
Oh, no, I think that's it. It's so hard when I hear those intros because everything changes so often for me. I deadlifted 760 at my last meet here.
Congrats, man!
A week ago, so I bumped that up, you know, and hopefully I get everything else moving. But you know, I started out, like you said, as a strength and conditioning coach at the University of Idaho, and that was, you know, several years back now. From then, I moved to Kentucky, ran a health club out there, and you know, finally ended up here in Columbus. So it's kind of been a whirlwind over these last few years, and so it's funny when I hear that, to see where I've come from and where I'm at now. And pleasure to be here on the call. Looking forward to answering some questions today.
Yeah, for sure. And those 5 pounds on the deadlift to a powerlifter, every 5 pounds counts. So we don't want to get that wrong. So AJ, we mentioned you train at Westside Barbell Club in Columbus. That's where you're living now. Just to kind of clear the air and just start things off, let's define Westside, because a lot of people have heard about it. They know it's a gym. They know it's a training style. Could you just give us like a background on the word or the gym or the training just to get things rolling?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because before I moved here, I always thought Westside was the what you read about, was the articles that Louis wrote. And what I kind of realize is Louis writes about the training system, the conjugate method, or the Westside system. But the Westside itself is, it's kind of like its own little world. It's like an NFL team, you know, what goes on inside, unless you're there, you really don't know. And so, you know, when people come and visit, they say the same thing. They're blown away. And really, you can't experience Westside unless you go, you visit, you train. You really don't know what Westside is. And, you know, I've said before, you know, I was probably one of their biggest fans. I had, you know, bought every DVD that Louis had put out there. I read every single one of his articles, had printed them out, put them in a file folder to go back through. You know, I'd spoken to Louis on the phone when I met him in Las Vegas at Nationals in 06. I sat and talked with him. And so, you know, to me, I knew everything there was to know about the system. And I thought I knew what Westside was. And when I walked in the doors and began training here, and I trained here for about 2 months before I moved here, I'd drive up. It was about a 4.5 hour drive, and I'd make that trip. That's how valuable training here is. I really was exposed to what Westside is and can see why it's so, you know, being here and training with Louis and why they continually produce the strongest lifters in the world, you know, for, I think it's been 25 plus years now, you know. And so it's hard for people to see, but really Westside is the gym, Westside system, the conjugate method is the training style. And to really know and understand both, you have to come to the gym.
Okay, I'm sure we'll dig into that a little deeper. But how did you first get hooked up training there? You said you were started off commuting. How many days a week were you doing that? And you've moved closer since then?
Yeah, what happened was I was in Kentucky, and where I was based at is a town called Owensboro, and I tried to put a team together there, and, you know, not much luck. There was a few bodybuilders in town, and, you know, I managed to get one training partner for bench press, but, you know, he wasn't a full meat lifter. And so I'd been traveling over to a guy's house in Indiana and doing squat. He had a monolift and stuff like that. But with my work schedule, I was just frustrated, and I, you know, I turned my garage into a garage gym and bought everything you could need. I had reverse hypoglue ham, you know, squat rack with monolith hooks and all that. But without a team, I really, you know, was struggling. And I went to UPA Nationals. It was hosted in Columbus, actually. Kenny Patterson hosted it here in Columbus, and I came, and I sat with Louis again, and, you know, he wondered what I was up to, and, you know, Louis keeps a very close eye on the sport as a whole. You know, this is what he does. This is life. You know, and so you know, he knew I was, and he said, you know, if you ever need want to train or something, you should come up. So, you know, I just put in a weekend.
Well, that's an
to come
honor
up
right there, just getting invited.
Yeah, you know, he opened the doors and said, you know, anytime you want to come, just let me know. So I planned, you know, a 4-day weekend to come up, and basically I wasn't coming up here to continue to train. I was coming up to learn what I needed to learn, take it back with me, and use it. And over those 4 days of being up here, you know, talking with Louis, talking with the other lifters, I realized that, you know, it was my kind of place. You know, it everything I wanted to achieve and all my goals and everything, I could see it happening with, you know, being there. And so what I started to do was I'd drive up every Friday. I'd come up and train with David Hoff in the evening. And for anyone that doesn't know, David is probably the strongest. Right now he's a junior lifter. He's the first teenager to squat. He was the youngest person to ever squat 1,000 pounds. And he just benched 825 a couple of weekends ago here.
Wow.
I think,
as a teenager he did this?
So. He squatted 1,000 as a teenager. I think he's 20 or 21 now.
Incredible.
And just benched 825. I mean, this guy is on a warpath. But I was training with him and coming up every Friday. And, you know, I'd drive up, train, do our stuff, and I'd drive back. And it was a long time. But, you know, Louis saw that dedication, I think. And he saw how serious I was. And, you know, he just flat out said, you know, you need to move here. And long story short, I just pretty much quit. I had a decent job running the health club. I just packed up, moved my wife, my dogs, and we just moved to Columbus and made it work. And thanks, you know, Louis helped out a lot and to get me on my feet on the ground. But you know, it's probably the best thing I ever did in my life. So
man, that's awesome! You know. What a brave move, just quitting your job and making the move. But you knew that's what it was going to take.
Yeah.
So
well,
when you said you were training. Oh, go ahead.
What I was going to say, you know, I was at a point where it was like powerlifting had become, I was struggling with the motivation. I was struggling with doing what I wanted to do based on my lifestyle. And, you know, what it came down to is I looked at it like this. I'm either going to be the guy that does what I want to do and achieve the goals I've set out, or I'm going to be the guy that looks back and makes excuses because everything else got in the way.
Right.
And, you know, it's a ballsy move, but, you know, I was unhappy in what I was doing. And a large part of the unhappiness came from not doing what I wanted to do in powerlifting. You know, because to me that's, you know, it's just as much as part of me as anything else. And, you know, it was painful to struggle through and try to make, you know, gains on my own, and it just created this unease in my life. And, you know, when I made the decision to move, it was like everything just weighed off the shoulders and everything came together. And, you know, so it's, to me, it was, you know, looking back, like I said, it was the best thing I ever did.
Yeah, and I mean, you probably would wind up having regret to this day if you hadn't made the move. But when you were training out of your garage, at that time, was that when you were kind of in between? Because you used to train with Brent Mikesell, one of the world's greatest squatters at one time. How is it different training with him as opposed to how it is at Westside now?
Yeah, when I trained with Brent, that's when I first started in powerlifting. I guess for me, I always thought a team was important from when I started in high school. You know, training with the other football players, you know, it was always a competition in the gym, and that really pushed each other. And I saw the importance of that. So I went to college, you know, I looked around, and Brent lived about an hour away. And so I started commuting and training with him. And when I trained with Brent, I was, you know, new. I was fresh. I had no experience whatsoever in the sport. I'd done a couple of deadlift-only competitions in the WABDL, but I had never done a full powerlifting meet. And Brent pretty much trained me, showed me everything there was to know. But Brent never had a big team. There was three or four of us on a consistent basis, maybe five or six at one point. And the weights that got moved around were always heavy, and I would always watch and kind of spot and load. And so for me, I was always seeing Brent work up to, you know, regularly 800 pounds in the gym, and I've seen him do 1,000 for a double and stuff like that. And so numbers like that were just numbers that got done. And so I made lots of progress really fast, and I think a lot of that was based on I had no conception of what heavy was. I didn't fear any weight because I saw these, massive men moving this weight on a regular basis. So to me, that was where I wanted to get to. And so
right.
everything in between was a path, was a stepping stone. And I, would jump 50 pounds almost, it seemed like, every meet. And, the Brent is a very laid-back, very calm, relaxed person. And, in essence, he teaches through doing. He does and watch and, you learn. And it was great. I never really had to think. I just followed. And, I talk to Brent still, and, a large part of where I'm at is because of him. But Brent got to a point where, he wasn't able to lift anymore, and, he had young children, and those things became, that became his priority. And so the training structure, broke down, and the team kind of dissolved, which, there's no fault of Brent. You can't go on forever at that level.
It seems like it happens to a lot of teams and a lot of gyms, actually.
Yeah, and so, we just didn't have the numbers to start with, and it pretty much was at one point just me and Brent. And so when Brent left, there was me, and then a couple, we got, some younger guys going, but, it became to a point where I went from being the youngest, most experienced, to the most experienced with the biggest numbers.
Right.
And it took me a long time at that point to move forward. And that's when I really started studying powerlifting. Because in college I was very much into the coaching and the sports.
You played football in college?
Huh?
Did you play football in college? I'm sorry.
No. I helped as a strength and conditioning
okay.
the whole time in college. And so I'd always looked into that. But, as far as studying of powerlifting, I just learned from what I learned from was Brent. And, he always mentioned about Westside and that. And that's kind of when I really started learning about it all. And, after a while there on my own, that's when I took the job. And that's kind of the in-between. Now,
right.
when I got to Westside, there's a lot of people, and there's a lot of competition, and it's
yeah,
very different.
How many guys
different.
Are there right now, or when you first got there?
Well, we got a lot of guys that come in a couple of days a week, from long distance away, and then we got the regulars. I'd probably say, overall, we probably have, 50-plus members that, come to the gym on a regular basis overall. Probably about 20 full powerlifters, give or take. And so, there's a lot of guys, and they're all highly competitive. And that's kind of what the gym breeds on. And so it's best described really like that high school atmosphere where everyone's gunning for each other, and the competition.
Yeah, that's a big amount of people, a lot
high.
Of competition.
Yeah.
Does
he
split
the,
you guys up into groups and stuff, or – how does it
yeah.
work? Who does he work with or pay attention to? Is everybody treated evenly, or does he focus more on the top-level guys, or how does that work?
Well, we have different crews, different times to go. We have morning crew and afternoon crew. Louis lifts in the morning with the morning crew, and we have, two monoliths in the gym, so he keeps you going. And, he tries to help everyone, but, he does – the top guys, he actually seems to allow you to do more of your own. He's a little more hands-off because, he assumes you're to the point where, you kind of know what you need to do. And we have a lot of us have conversations with Louis outside of the gym about what we need to do in the gym, and so he expects you to get it done. So that's
right.
kind of how it works, But, as far as the differences go, it's kind of going from, me being a follower and just seeing what's happening to me, like, being a competitor and, forcing myself to get better. It's kind of a do or die, So,
definitely more competitive.
That's the difference.
Wow, sounds like an awesome place to train. What? Tell us some more about Louis, what he's like. I'm sure everybody in this call knows who Louis Simmons is. He's a pioneer in strength training and an icon to the sport. What's it like, seeing him or working with him?
Yeah, I give Louis a lot of flack, but know, he's an evil genius, so to speak. The guy, you know, you get talking to him, and you know, a lot of people have pigeonholed him, you know, as like the powerlifting guy or whatever. But you know, he continues learning. He's very open to new ideas. You know, he just expects dedication, and you know, a lot of people, you know, who for what reason step away from the sport or stuff like that. You know, once you're done, you're done, and Louis, you know, moves on to the next project, so to speak. You know, he as a person, I mean, he's great. He knows exactly what you need to do, and he'll tell you what to do. Whether you listen is up to you. You know, he doesn't force anyone to do anything. But you know, just from being here, you know, with him, like, he just watches, observes, tells you what you need to do, and if you do it, it works. And it's kind of, I mean, you could argue with him, you know, all you want, but, you know, until you prove him wrong, you know, he's going to continue to coach and tell you. And, you know, the guys that listen seem to always be making progress, so it doesn't really make sense to go against him. But, you know, he's like a...
Would you say it's like a true coach-player relationship? Like, if you're on another team or something, you kind of just listen to your coach. You know, you're friendly with each other, but you probably don't hang out and stuff. I mean, is he more, you know, someone you just listen to what he says, and he's
like
the authority figure at the gym, and once you're off the team or you graduated, you know, then there's new freshmen coming in he's working with, so.
Exactly, you know, but, you know, Louis does like to get his hands dirty, you know, he's just like that, he's the coach, you know, and you're just kind of like that if it was an NFL team, once you're washed up and done, the coach, you know, they don't have time for you, they have other things going on. But, you know, Louis likes to get his hands dirty and get in there, and, you know, he still lifts, I mean, he's in his 60s now, and he still lifts hard, you know, as much as he can, and, you know, setting, you know, he's doing exercises and, you know, breaking, you know, records on certain things, and, man, the guy is just as competitive as the next one, and, you know, he learns by doing, and for anyone that comes to visit, you know, he'll get in competitions with and stuff like that, and, you know, it's a great coach, and you know, I'll be grateful for Louis. You know, even in the short time I've been here, you know, this is a time in my life that, you know, will never be forgotten. And you know, like I said, right now it's you know, everything I could want.
For sure. Hey, do you guys ever have just riffraff, just trying to walk in and not even realize what they're trying to get themselves into? I mean, you can't just be an open door to anybody who wants to come in. What are the requirements as far as visiting or becoming a member of the gym? How does all that work?
Well, yeah, it's kind of funny.
There's got to be some funny stories, just people walking.
Yeah, in. You know, it's a private gym, but, you know, a lot of people have shown up at Louis' house because that's the, you know, his business address is on there, and they've shown up there, you know, and kind of randomly. So, you know, they're constantly, you know, having people knock on their door there. But, no, you know, I guess there was a time when some guy kind of walked in with his gym bag and just kind of looked around and, you know, started setting up on a bench press and, you know, kind of nonchalantly like you would, you know, if you snuck into a health club or something. But he was politely asked to leave and was never seen again. But we get a lot of people who would really like to come and train, and the problem is with the level we're at, people can't just work in, you know.
Right.
The weakest guy right now in the morning crew squats 730 pounds. That's our weakest guy, and you know Louis is on him all the time, and you know you can either take it, you know, this guy's either going to quit or he's going to get stronger. You know, he has two options. And, you know, he chose to get stronger continually. But when our weakest guy has a 730-pound squat, we can't have someone coming in who can't keep up. Because, you know, that group, that lowest is 730, we don't have a lower group for him to work in with.
So you basically got to at least get to that point before you could even try to be a member of the gym.
You know, and, you know, people will come in and say they do this and say they do that, but you can't lie about numbers, and it shows through very quickly. You know,
right, your first workout.
You know, several people have, you know, Louis has spoken to and said that, you know, right now, you know, you're not strong enough to be here. You know, come back when you're ready, you know? And he doesn't do it to just be, you know, an ass. He does it because he's trying to create world champions. And if he has to spend all his time, you know, teaching someone the very basics, it's so restrictive. He only has so much time. And
right.
We're there, you know, and the majority of us have moved from, you know, out of state, different cities in Ohio, you know, have moved there. So, you know, he's very protective of that. And, you know, it is an elite group. As far as visiting goes, I've never seen Louie turn any visitor down. We just, you know, people come, you know, to see what we're doing, maybe get a workout in, you know, while they're
right.
there. You know, I've never seen him tell no to anyone. But as far as training there, you know, he does expect a certain level of strength. And that's only because, you know, if you're not at that level, you're on your own. And if you're on your own, you're not going to get better. And, you know, there's different thoughts on that, but it obviously works, and it's been working. And, you know, I don't think anyone can knock the results. So, you know, and, of course, you get the people who come who seem like they're going to do awesome but just can't handle the pressure. You know, they don't train that hard. You know, strength has kind of been easy for them and that, or, you know, they get to a level.
Or maybe they were the big fish where they were.
Yeah, you know, so
they can't hack it.
Exactly. So we get all sorts come through, and you know, as Louis say, only the strongest survive, or only those of us who are the most dedicated survive. So you know, it's interesting to see that, and you know, thankfully.
Has anyone ever gotten kicked out, or what would you have to do to get banned? Maybe just being lazy,
well, you know,
and not showing up, or things like that.
Yeah, that, you know, the biggest thing is you got to be there. It's a team, so you got to be there for each other, you know. And if you're not going to be there, you know, you got to let everyone know.
Got to be a team player. I mean, even if you're hurt or it's not your meet, you still got to be helping out.
Yeah, you know, if you played for a professional team and didn't show up to workouts, you wouldn't get to play. You know, it's as simple as that. And the other thing is, you know, it's unfortunately, you know, and you know, I don't really know why people choose to do this, but they start to doubt the methods, or they want to do something different, you know. They see what, you know, Big Iron is doing, or what Metal Militia is doing, or, you know, all these different gyms that are out there. You know, maybe they're friends with people from there, or they just, you know, intrigued by those, and they want to do their own thing. And you know, like Louis said, you know, look, this is Westside Barbell, you know. We train this way. And if you don't want to train with the system, don't come and train there, you know. If you played, you know, like I said, if you played for a sports team and didn't want to run the plays, you're not going to play.
Right,
and
like
so,
your quarterback,
you know,
calling audibles from plays that aren't
in
the playbook.
Yeah,
doesn't
you know,
mean
it's
the plays
fine.
Don't
I mean,
work, but you got to do what you're doing on that team.
And exactly. And Louis, you know, he is all for experimentation, but, you know, if you're flat out just not going to train using the methods, then there's really no point being there, you know. And, it, you know, that's caused some friction in the past, and you know, some people have been asked to leave, but, you know, most of them, you know, are ready to leave when they leave, you know, so.
Right. Well, you mentioned some of the methods. Let's go into some of those methods now. Could you talk about the conjugate method? What exactly is that? More than just rotating exercises, could you explain the conjugate method a little more?
Yeah, you know, basically, you know, most people know what periodization is, you know, with the system where you just, you know, gradual overload, and or, you know, periodization where you have blocks of training time where you'd work on speed for a couple of months and then you'd work on strength and, you know, or endurance or general physical preparation, you know, getting in shape, conditioning, and traditionally these are all broken up into sections. And what the conjugate method does is kind of a casein method where everything is blended into the week. And everything is done, you know, you have 2 days for speed training, one for upper, one for lower, and then 2 days for maximal effort training, one for upper, one for lower. So it's a 4 day system broken into, two dynamic training days and two max effort training days. So, that's pretty much what the conjugate train is. So the easiest way to explain it is it's like, you do everything at once. So you work on getting faster, more, you know, more explosive, you work on getting stronger. If you need conditioning, that would be in there too, and so you're always prepared for battle, so to speak.
Okay.
You're never stuck in one phase, and the reason for this is really, you know, every time if you train specifically for a block, you train for that block, and then you move on to the next, you're going to lose a little bit of what you gained, you know?
Right.
And so this way the gains continue to roll over. So
you kind of work on everything at once instead of blocking it off into different periods.
Exactly.
Now you mentioned the dynamic effort days or the speed days. How are those set up as far as percentages or sets and reps? Let's take the bench.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The bench. Basically, the speed days kind of Louis came up with a 3-week pendulum system, so to speak, and he kind of got it from a Soviet Union weightlifting champion. And basically, what the weightlifter had stated and what Louis had found, you know, training, you know, multiple elite level powerlifters was, for speed after 3 weeks, you're not going to get much faster or stronger. So you wave back down and start over again. And traditionally, like, it kind of varies depending on who you are, but traditionally, you know, we're going the first week, you know, like 45%, 50%, 55% for 9 sets of 3, and we do that based off of Prilipin's chart, which is a, you know, a weightlifting chart that was created that basically says how many sets and reps to do based on percentage that you're using. And this, we don't stick, it's hard to explain. I always think that everyone stuck to the percentages, but we don't stick to the percentages based on the, you know, during different points, your strength might be up, it might be down, it might vary. So, you know, we really go on speed, and the percentages are kind of benchmarks in our head. Like, we know we should be around this weight. You know, okay. If you raw max, you know, if you bench 500, 225, you're going to be around that weight for speed. But if you're slow, you know, we'll strip the weight off. If it's really fast, we'll go up in weight. So the percentages, a lot of people see the programs that Louis lays out and think that's exactly what you do. But really, they're just more guidelines for us, and we vary on that. And so that's kind of, we do 3-week waves, and we just vary. We go up a little bit every week. We usually are using accommodating resistance, mini bands.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. That's chains. With the speed work mostly?
Yeah, mainly with the speed work. And, you know, we'll do some max effort work with that stuff, but, you know, the speed work just consists basically 3 weeks of the same exercise. And I used to think, I'm not sure why I thought this, I don't know if I just missed it in the videos or something, but I always used to think speed work was like, for the bench, was always, you know, straight barbell, you know, with mini bands.
Right.
But I, you know, after being here and talking to Louis, you can do speed bench with, you know, variations. So you could do like a floor press for a speed bench. You can do, say, a board press for speed, like speed waves,
cool.
You know. So it doesn't always have to be full range.
Idea as you.
So it doesn't always have to be full range bench. And that's something that, you know, I did not realize until I came here. But, you know, basically you do the 3-week wave and then you wave back down, and, you know, when you get stronger you might go up a little bit, only if the speed's there. But the you know, the purpose of it really is to just, you know, learn how to be explosive and get your technique down, you know, and that, you know, that for me has really, really helped, the repetition of that movement over and over again. And, you know, the 3 reps are based on the time under tension. Your 3 reps explosively is the same as 1 max effort rep. And recently, Louis had guys, we've been trying sets of 5 because with the way the bench shirts are nowadays, time under tension seems to have increased. You know, it takes a lot longer to
get the bar down
and to
yeah.
press. So we've been experimenting with that. Some guys have gotten great results, others haven't. So it just kind of depends on what style of bench you are as far as, you know, what's going to work best. But that's, you know, pretty much what speed benching is, you know. And,
yeah, about 30 seconds in between sets, or how long do you take?
We try to go, you know, I've read 60 seconds, and, you know, I read an article by Dave Tate back in the day where, you know, he would reduce his rest period each week. You know, he'd start with 60, then 45, then 30 the third week. And we just try to, we just pair up usually, and we just go back to back, you know.
Right, I mean, you can't speed it up if you got 3-4 guys in your group, and it's
yeah.
your turn, you just keep going.
Yeah, so we just go back to back and just try to go as fast as we can, you know, and we just try to keep it simple. But when we start thinking too much, that's when things get too complicated, and we make simple things that should be, you know, easy to do. You know, you got stopwatch out, and it's just we
yeah.
just found that, you know, just go back and forth, and we, you know, and not have to think about it, because, When it gets too complicated, that's when, you know, you really lose sight of actually what you're there to, which is to get stronger, you know, get
Well, it
faster.
seems like, you know, there's a lot of science behind all this, but at the same time, if you take it too literally and focus too much on that, you lose the essence a little bit of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly.
But you mentioned accommodating resistance with the speed stuff. Just for anybody who doesn't know what that is, you mentioned the bands and the chains. Just talk about some of the benefits of that, and do you use those on your max effort lifts as well?
Yeah, we use accommodating resistance a lot, mainly on the speed work, but we do use it max effort too. You know, if we're doing a floor press, you might throw some chains on there. If it's a bench press, max effort. If we're, you know, doing deadlift, you might pull against bands or something like that. But the benefit of accommodating resistance, and, you know, before even, you know, when I was training with Brent, we used bands and chains as well. And so I've always used accommodating resistance, and basically, you know, although, you know, according to biomechanics, you should be stronger when your angles are shorter, but, you know, at lockout, everyone struggles at lockout. Everyone, you know, on the squat, on the deadlift, on the bench press, like the last part of the motion is usually the hardest. And, you know, that's due to the strength curve. So what Louis does is we use lighter weight as far as bar weight goes with accommodating resistance. So let's say, you know, our bench press is 500 raw. We might use 400 pounds in bar weight with, you know, 100 pounds of accommodating resistance. So as we lower the bar, it gets lighter, which allows us to really blast it off the chest and then go through that lockout point. Or we might go, you know, we might go over that 500. So now we're using 525 pounds at the top, but only 425 pounds at the bottom. So you see how it allows you to kind of lift more weights at the top. So what you essentially do is you train those weak points to be stronger. And, you know, and with the, you know, in powerlifting, thanks to the gear, it's really allowed you to overload that top end.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting help off the bottom with the shirt, and then you've been training your lockout, so.
Yeah, so that's how it carries over, you know, but it's, you know, it's beneficial for everyone, you know, and, you know, our football players use it that we have training here, and, you know, our fighters use it too, but, you know, not to the extreme. Like, you know, for squatting, where we do our circumax phase, which is kind of our peaking phase, going into a meet, we use a lot of band tension, you know, 500 pounds of band tension. So, you know, we don't have our athletes use that much band tension, but, you know, you can see what I'm saying as far as it allows you to use less weight on the bar and more weight at the top. So, in essence, you know, you're not killing the body trying to get, you know, that little bit stronger. You overload you that top end, and it really seems to teach the muscles how to squeeze through. And then when you go back to that straight weight, for full range of motion and stuff, it seems a lot easier. So, I mean, right. I've always used it, and it's always worked. So, you know, I know there's people out there who, you know, aren't big fans of it, but, I mean, I've always used it. It's always worked. So, you know, I haven't seen it not work for someone. So
you don't do it, I don't know if this is true, does it overload the CNS if you do it too many weeks in a row?
You know, we talked about this. Louis just held a seminar here recently, and we got into talking about the CNS. And most people really don't kill their CNS. What most people do is they tap out mentally before they tap out physically. And so, you know, you can get, you know, overuse injuries. You know, if you're going against heavy band tension all the time, your joints are freaking going to hurt. You know, it's just what's going to happen.
Right.
And at that point, you know, are you smart enough to take a deload week, you know, to do what's right, as far as icing the elbows and that stuff, or are you going to push out and blame the exercises? And so, you know, that's kind of, you know, I don't really, you know, the CNS fatigue thing and the burnout and all this, you know, I think it's a lot harder to do than what most people think. I think what most people get is they're too tired, you know, so.
Yeah. Or just the overuse injuries, like you said, more so than the CNS.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, it's just what I've seen, and, you know, I've seen a lot of people say that, oh, my CNS is fried. But, you know, if your CNS was fried on the bench press, your CNS would be fried on the squat.
Right.
You know, you'd be exhausted all the time. You wouldn't be able to do anything. You wouldn't be squatting heavy but not be able to bench, you know. So it's kind of, I think a lot of it is a mental thing. You know, people break down mentally. They're mentally weak, and they can't handle that. Or they're out of shape. You know, they're not conditioned. So.
Speaking of mentally, we talked about this. You got your interview coming out next month in Powerlifting USA. We talked about what it takes mentally to train at Westside and why we think. Why do you think most people just couldn't hack it there?
Well, you know,
we kind of talked
like
about
I was,
this a little bit.
Yeah, we were saying, you know, when you come here, you come here to get stronger. And Louis is going to do everything to get you stronger. And he's kind of like the old school coach. You know, he's not going to be your best friend and tap you on the shoulders. And some people do very well in that system, and some people don't. You know, he's going to throw everything at you, and you're going to get stronger. And if you can't get stronger, then, you know, there's a problem. And the competition between lifters is at a high level. So if you don't like competition, you know, that's not going to work. So it just depends on what kind of personality you have, you know. It's not a place for everyone, you know. And some people have a hard time dealing with that. You know, they think that, you know, I don't like being yelled at by my training partner because I don't want to do that exercise. Well, that's what happens here. So if you don't like it, don't train here, you know.
Not like you're forced to be there.
Exactly.
It's a privilege to be there.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people like to be the strongest guy in their gym, and then they come here, and they're thrown in with a group of people that are stronger than them. And, you know, the thing with it here, we do so many different exercises for our max effort stuff. You know, we continue, you know, with max effort, you're rotating every week. So we're always doing different exercises. So you might kick ass 1 week, but then the next week, you know, the exercises hit your weakness, and you struggle.
Right.
And so you need to be able to handle that and come back the next week with aggression. And with
like check your ego at the door and get better at what you're weak at.
If you come in and you suck that week, you got to be able to handle that. And a lot of people can't handle seeing, like, getting beat, you know. And they get beat, and you see, like, their world get crushed. And then they win, and it's like they're on high again. And, you know, you got to be able to understand, you know, hey, sometimes I get my ass kicked, and sometimes I'll kick some ass. You know, it's like if you're a fighter, you know, at some point you're going to get knocked out, but you got to keep fighting, you know. So
right.
That's kind of the way it is. It's a very aggressive place, you know, lots of testosterone in there, and it's pretty much fight or flight. And, you know, some people, I don't know why, but they don't see it like that. They think everyone should be best friends and, you know, all of this. And, you know, I love the guys I train with, you know. We hang out, we do stuff, but I'm after all of them. I want to be the strongest in that gym. I want to have my name on that record board, you know, and I'll do whatever it takes for me to get there, you know. Yeah, I'm friends with these guys, but I still want to kick their ass, you know, and when I beat them on something, I feel freaking proud of myself, and I know they feel the same, you know, but for some people, they like to be everyone's friend. They don't like to do that, you know, and so, you know, that mental side of it, you know, some people are cut out for it, some people aren't. And, you know, there's gyms all over the country. So if you don't like it, you know, just leave. You know, if you don't want to do what we're doing, just leave, you know. You don't need approval from us.
Right. Are there any girls that train there?
We got some girls that train there. They kind of have their own little crew. I don't think they would probably fit in too well with us. But, you know, it's interesting because the girls we do have train here have the same attitude as us.
Right.
They're chasing those world records. You know, they want to
be
the best.
Worried about offending them or anything.
Yeah, and so, you know, sometimes, you know, it's hard in a group because there's friction, you know, because you might have two guys who are really close to each other and they're going back and forth, and especially if they're the same weight class, you know.
Right.
And it comes easy for some people. It's harder for others. So there's a lot of times there's friction and stuff. But, you know, it's funny because the girls we do have in their training, they have that. They have a little bit of that attitude. And I think that's why they are training there, you know, because, you know, a lot of them, they want to learn from Louis, and they get that. But then they do enjoy that competition, and it's kind of what sets them apart from most of the other females that, you know, you see out there training who are, you know, either training for weight loss or something like that. I mean, these are
right.
Highly competitive girls. They usually come from a real sporting background, you know, and you know, they're strong. We got some real strong girls in here, you know. So Molly Edwards, she trains here. She squatted 500 in her first meet. So
wow.
450 or 500, you know. So we got some really strong girls. And then, you know, we got Natalie Harrington, I think she did 450 her last meet. And I might be off a little bit on those numbers, but, I mean, this girl, Natalie, I think, was 132 or something like that. So, I mean, 132 pounds squatting 450. She might even be lighter. I could be wrong. But, I mean, they're aggressive. They're strong. And you know, they're just kind of like
guys,
a little
the
bit.
The guys thinking about visiting, don't even walk in the door unless you can at least beat the girls.
Yeah, we got girls here who would just embarrass people, you know. Laura Phelps, she lives in Cincinnati now, but she comes over and trains. You know, I think she holds the world record at in the 181s at like 7.
Yeah, great lifter.
771 or something. So I mean, you're talking about people who, you know, these girls are serious, you know, and they're not your average girl, and they have that attitude, and they're there for the same reason we're there.
You mentioned earlier some athletes, like you mentioned fighters and stuff. Do you have non-powerlifters training there, and how do the Westside methods help non-powerlifters in their sports?
Yeah, we have quite a right now. We have quite a few football players training there, being the summer, and they do, you know, they use the same methods of us, but it's changed a little bit. They'll do higher reps, like 3s and 5s. More to mimic their time on the field and stuff, and you know, Louis, there's a little bit different as far as what we need, what they need. They still squat, bench, and deadlift, but they'll do, you know, 3 reps instead of max, like I said, and they always use a box squat, but they'll vary the box squat height, you know, to try and hit their glutes and their hamstrings. From different angles, so that they, you know, because they're in different positions on the field
right.
A lot of the times, and so we want to make sure that they can explode from every single position. You know, in powerlifting, you go up and down, and it's the same distance every single time. So, you know, we don't train the high boxes, and you know, we train a certain height unless we have a weakness we need to hit. But, you know, so football players, we vary their heights.
Obviously, they're not going to need the gear and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. They don't use the gear. You know, Louis will put some of them in loose briefs if they, you know, like to protect their hips and stuff, if we want to get them out wide squatting and stuff. But in majority,
right.
Their feet are in a little bit closer because they're never in a sumo stance, you know, and things like that. And they do a lot of sets, and a lot of that comes down to, like, Louis, you know, we want them to be explosive every single play, and there's a lot of play, so we do a lot of sets for them. For benching, they'll do, you know, again, high reps, and, you know, the exercises vary. Pretty much, you know, the same as far as building them up, you know, very explosive. We have the football bar that the football players use, if they have any shoulder problems whatsoever, which... You know, a lot of football players have shoulder problems, and that comes from, you know,
from that wide elbow bench too. Everybody does before they learn the powerlifting style.
Yeah, so you know, we fix that, and you know, they do a lot of box jumping, you know, different heights, weighted box jumps, stuff like that, and then they do a lot of general their physical preparedness work. They do a lot of sled pulls and prowl pushes. And they don't always do sprints and stuff. And Louis has a lot of them do a lot of walking and things like that. You know, just depends on how they feel that day.
Right.
You know, because a lot of them are doing so much with the team that a lot of times we have to, you know, be careful what we do with them because they're with us to get better. We're not there to kill them. And their conditioning, it just depends on where they're at. So, you know, that's kind of how we vary it for the football players. For our fighters, they use the methods, but they do a lot more time sets, like time kettlebell swings, you know, 5 minutes and stuff
kinda
like that. So
it's more resistance cardio almost, kind of like strong.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, and you know, they'll do like a minute of, you know, squatting with the belt squat machine and stuff like that. So, you know, they use the same methods of us, but in a different way. So that's probably the best way to put it. And, you know, Louis looks at them the same, looks at their strengths and weaknesses and stuff like that and determines.
I mean, you take a fighter and have him go jog 5 miles, that's not going to carry over into a fight when they're pushing and pulling on somebody the whole time. It'd be much better to use some kettlebells and do some things like that.
Exactly.
So I'm going to talk about West Side as far as where it originated from. Louis popularized it in the U.S., but it's based on some Russian methods. I don't know the whole history on that. Do you know some of where the West Side methods originated from?
Yeah, you know, what happened was Louis was using, you know, basic periodization. And, you know, with that, he would, you know, going into a meet would get heavier and heavier every week. And, you know, he would do numbers in the gym and then go to the meet and be 100 pounds off or 50 pounds off. And he could never figure out what the heck was going on. And he would talk to the other lifters, and they had the same problem. And he said, you know, there's got to be a better way. And I believe he got seriously hurt. And so, you know, he said, this has to stop. I have to find a better way to train. And he started, you know, getting a bunch of books from overseas. And he got a bunch of stuff from the Soviet Union and read about the Dynamo Training Club. And basically, they used a system where they rotated, they do lots of max effort exercises, and I think they had like 15 exercises or something like that, which they rotated through. And, you know, basically, Louis started experimenting with that, and that's pretty much where he got most of the ideas from. And, you know, he started using it with other people. You know, he started with just himself in his basement, and, you know, he was using it. He was getting results, and he started building a team up. He had, like, five guys or something training in his basement. And you know, everyone who did it, it worked for. So it just kind of spread from that. And then, you know, I think he used it, he said, like, 5 or 10 years or something. It was a long time he was using
Wow.
before he ever wrote about it. And, you know, they had, you know, national champions and stuff like that. You know, using the system before he ever started writing about it. So, I mean, it's been around for a long time, and it's kind of like an evolutionary process. It's always changing based on the demands of our sport. You know, the gear changes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you the next question, how West Side has evolved since, you know,
yeah.
10
you
years
know,
ago
Louis,
now.
When Louis started using these, they lifted, you know, basically raw. You know, and then the first Z-suits came along, you know, these paper-thin suits, and, you know, it's evolved into what it is today, you know. And so the system has had to evolve around that, you know, and, you know, we still box squat and we still do stuff like that, but there's, you know, we get in our gear, you know, I'd say more frequent than they ever used to. I believe, you know, I think Louis said for a while they didn't put that gear on at all. They just put it on at the meet, you know?
Right. And then it started now, being just like 6 weeks before the meet, and now you're in almost every week?
Yeah, we don't go full gear every week. We still, there's still a huge focus on getting stronger, you know, which is kind of different to most gyms out there in powerlifting right now. You know, we don't spend as, you know, we're not in our shirts every week. We're not in our full gear every week. But, you know, we use Brisa on the squat every week, you know, and obviously now we're using our Brisa, you know, better than they were back then. And, you know, we gear up going into a meet. You know, we do our circuit max phase, you know, with our suit bottoms on. We take, you know, we go in our shirt probably once every month at least, like we're getting in that shirt. But
okay.
What's important for people listening to understand is most of us who are doing this come from doing geared work all the time. And most of us are at the point where we know gear inside out. So for a beginner, I would suggest they probably need to get in the gear a little bit more because they need to learn the gear. Once you learn the gear, then you don't need to be in it all the time. But
and likewise, you want to have some kind of base before you even are even really
exactly.
Eating.
Yeah. We keep like most people who come and visit. We, you know, our advice is, you know, get stronger before you try to get back in the gear. So it's just kind of just depends on where you're at. But you know, if you go to Westside's website, which is Westside. I think it's westside-barbell.com. There's an article section there, and it's got everything on that Louis wrote since the beginning. So you can go, if you're like me and you like learning this stuff, you can go through and read them all.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can kind of track that process. And if you just want to see what we're doing now, you know, you can read the latest articles. So.
Yeah, I think I could talk to you all day about this stuff, AJ. You're extremely knowledgeable on this, and appreciate everything you're doing, but I don't want to keep you on the line all day. You just mentioned the westside-barbell.com website. You've also got a book, don't you? And you've got your bench press program coming out. Where can people learn more and get a hold of you if they have any questions or anything?
Yeah, Louis just wrote a book called West Side Methods. It goes over pretty much everything, and that's available in hard copy or ebook on the West Side website. It is westside-barbell.com. And then as far as I got a bench press product coming out, it's really not aimed at powerlifters. The way it evolved, I was talking with someone, and they didn't have bands, they didn't have chains, and you know, they were like, you know, what can I do? And I said, well, you know, there's this program I did, you know, when I wanted to get to 400, I used it, and when I wanted to get to 500, I used it again, and I used it periodically over the years, and I always kind of kept it to myself, and I didn't really think anyone else would, you know, benefit from it for whatever reason. I don't know if it was because most of the people I talk with are powerlifters, and so I really hadn't shared it, but I realized, you know, when I found it, I was at a point where I had been trying to increase my bench for so long, and it just hadn't gone anywhere. And then I kind of stumbled on this program. It was like this, like, you know, secret program, and you know, it was a program from overseas and all of this, and it's just a 6-week program. But I used it, and it got great results. And you know, I used it with clients when I was, you know, doing personal training. And so, you know, but I kind of never really thought about doing anything with it. And then someone said, you know, there's a lot of people out there who don't have bands, chains, that don't train, you know, at a gym that has ball presses and foam and, you know, right, this fancy stuff. And you know, there's a lot of people who don't like to do max effort exercises because, you know, they're training just one or two of them, and they don't have the spotters to do that. And you know, someone said, you know, there's a lot of people out there who could benefit from this. So I decided to try to, you know, put it together. And it's actually more of like, it's like a video product. Like, I go through the setup and everything,
cool,
how to set up properly. And then the program there. And then I have some pretty cool bonuses I'll be throwing in. And I'm putting that together right now, hopefully to be launched the end of the month here. But for now, if you go to upyourbench.com, there's going to be a free report there. It should actually go up today, so by the time you're listening to this, it'll probably be up. And I put together 36 of the biggest bench press problems, and you can get that there and opt in for that. And then when the product goes live, you'll get it. That's my dog in the background right at the
end. I think my dog was barking earlier.
You can opt in to get that, and then you'll get a special heads up on when that goes live. So.
Cool, yeah, and keep an eye out on criticalbench.com for that, too. It's an awesome video coaching, great product. Going to be promoting that, and like AJ said, there's a ton of people out there that just don't have access to all this specialized powerlifting equipment and barbell clubs. I mean, it's hard to find those gyms and those groups of guys, so this is something you can do at any gym, get yourself up to that 400-pound raw, which is a great achievement. So definitely looking forward to finding out more about that program and sharing it with you guys. So thanks again, AJ. It was awesome talking to you. Really appreciate you taking the time today. And I'm sure we'll talk to you real soon. Looking forward to seeing your interview next month, too, in Powerlifting USA.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you later.